and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast. This is the parenting podcast with a difference, and I am your host, Gemma. So today is the 30th episode of the Send Mum Club. I actually can't believe that we are about to be 30 episodes deep already. It's absolutely crazy. I hope you're enjoying listening to the podcasts, because I'm really enjoying having these conversations with these amazing women, and I hope that you're finding it interesting. I hope you're finding it helpful, because ultimately that was the point of me doing it. Our household is still ill. My God, this is the illness that keeps on giving. I feel like I'm going to have a cough and a headache forever. And I feel like I'm going to be wiping Leo's nose forever. And as we all know, toddlers love having their nose and their faces wiped, don't they? So that's super fun. We've also got to the point where it's difficult to keep anything on his feet. He just won't keep shoes on. He has to wear tights because he can't be trusted with socks. And we've just got to that cold point, haven't we, where the temperature's suddenly dropped. And I mean, I tried to try his hats on the other day. We were in our bedroom and I was going through his drawer of like stuff that I haven't looked at for ages. The majority of it's too small. But I was like, oh, he's got some really nice hats here. He literally wouldn't even let me try them on his head. So when it gets down to super, super cold and you can see your breath, I'm just basically going to have a cold, angry child. But we've all been there, right? That's not just my kid. Make me feel better, please. Right, moving on to this week's episode. Now, this is actually an episode that I recorded, God, so long ago. It was last month that I spoke to Kelly Hughes. Now, Kelly's somebody that I met once a really long time ago. I went to a Down Syndrome Liverpool meetup and I bumped into Kelly there. And then we didn't really stay in touch. She's then come back into my life because of the podcast. And I'm delighted about this, because this is a chat that I really enjoyed having. And I'm sorry it's taken me so long to get it out to you, but you know, it's just life, isn't it? Gets in the way sometimes. Anyway, this is a brilliant chat. So Kelly is a fellow Down syndrome mum. Her little girl, Gracie, actually makes an appearance in this chat, as does my Leo. So you can listen out for them. They're not difficult to hear. Gracie has Down syndrome. She also has autism and ADHD, as well as PDA. And she's also on the pathway to potentially being diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder as well. I mean, I'll let Kelly go into those much more than I will here, because that's kind of the point of the chat, isn't it? But we talk, amongst other things, about the battle to find the right school for Gracie and the importance of having the right professionals on your side and helping you fight your case. We talk about school refusal and something that Kelly told me before we recorded that we talk about in this chat that really, really struck a nerve with me. Something a medical professional said to her after Gracie was born, which I'd love to think that Kelly was the only person that this has been said to, but I highly doubt it. So we talk about exactly what was said to Kelly, the lasting impact that had, and the importance of using the right language and the importance of educating people of why that is so crucial. I think you're really going to like this chat. I certainly did. So let's get into it. Kelly, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
You're more than welcome, Gemma.
So you're here to talk about your little girl, Gracie, who is 8. What's she like?
She is an absolute little legend. She really is. She, no diagnosis defines Gracie. Gracie is just Gracie. She has Down syndrome, but that is not a problem for Gracie. She can achieve, she can speak. All the things that worried me when she was born have not fazed her in the slightest. She just takes everything in a stride. She's like, she wants to learn everything. If you meet her, she's like meeting a little adult. She doesn't think she's 8, and she will tell you, no, I'm the boss today. Everybody listen to Gracie today. Her reading is fantastic. And she's just amazing. That's why we call her Amazing Gracie, because nothing defines her. And everything that is meant to hold her back seems to push her forward, if that makes sense.
I think as a mum of a child with Down syndrome, it's so nice to hear somebody who's a little bit further ahead on that journey say those things, isn't it? Because yeah. I think I've spoken about this before on this podcast, but I think once you know that they are going to do stuff, you can let go of those worries, can't you? And we obviously haven't reached that stage with Leo, you know, he's only three. We haven't reached the like the reading and the writing stage. So it makes me feel nice to hear you say things like that about Gracie.
She is one of not many children that I know of with Down syndrome who passed her year one phonics, ahead of a lot of her abled and typical bodied peers. And I think the thing that I've learned on this journey is it's all about the right support, the right interventions. The things that are right for your child might not necessarily be right for another child. But it's exploring things, meeting other people, getting advice and support from the community. That's where I got all my support from. It wasn't the professionals. It was other mums and dads who said to me, I always remember when I very first went to a support group and a lot of children with Down syndrome stick their tongues out. And one mum said to me, pop it back in. Every time she sticks that tongue out, pop it back in. And I did. And when Gracie went for her speech and language assessment at the age of about 18 months, they couldn't believe her tongue control, her muscle control, all from one mum just saying, just pop a little tongue back in when she sticks it out. And we don't have any issues now with her tongue.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we've actually met once before and you said that to me the first time I met you. You did. So it's like, I think that's something that's really lovely about the Send community is you passing that on to people who are, sorry if you can hear Leo in the background, clearly not asleep. I think it's like passing your knowledge and things that you've learned on to people behind you on the journey, isn't it? And I think that's something that feels really nice about the community. But also, it is little things like that because, in a way, when Leo hasn't really stuck his tongue out too much, but you're right, that is something that a lot of children with Down syndrome do, and it's because of low tone, isn't it, in their mouth a lot of the time. And Leo, he tends to do it a little bit when he's tired, I'd say. But when he first started to do it, I almost felt, before you said that to me, I almost thought, oh God, I shouldn't push that. But like, is that almost being a bit mean? Is it trying to change who he is? I don't know. So sometimes you just need another mum, don't you, to say, no, do that, that's fine. And then you're like, okay.
It's like the bouncer. A lot of children with Down syndrome, they'll say, don't put them in bouncers.
Oh, really?
Because of the hypertonia, because of the hypermobility. I put Gracie in a bouncer from about 5 months old with all pillows underneath her, and it built that strength in her legs. It really did. So that when we had our first physio appointment again, they commented how strong her legs were. And that was another tip another mum had told me. And speaking to a lot of the older parents as well, they say that if they were to learn a lot of the tips from other parents and information, it could have helped them. And it is down to just, and you don't even think of it half the time, just passing on little snippets of information. But it can really help people at the times when they don't even know they need that help.
And there he is again. Can you hear him, Kelly?
I can.
He's like, you're talking about me. Hi.
You know what, I would say the louder they are, just embrace it. Because I prayed for Gracie to talk and now I pray for her to be quiet. And it's a horrible thing to say. But the constant, mum, why this? Mum, why that? And as well, everybody's different, but I've told Gracie from when she was little that she's got a disability, that she's got Down syndrome, that she's special. And it's a superpower. And she does now say, when people say to you, Gracie, do you have it? She goes, I've got Down syndrome, autism, ADHD. She rolls them all off like a little professional.
I've thought about that a little bit, about how we speak to Leo. Obviously, he's far too little at the minute. But when he is at an age that's appropriate to start kind of saying that, how did you do that to start with? And how old was she? Can you remember?
Yeah, so I had a really bad start with Gracie. the whole way the diagnosis was delivered. She was in Skaboo for 7 weeks afterwards. She was discharged with oxygen feeding tubes. I didn't leave the house for 5 months. I didn't really have many people to speak to. And then I found a lovely lady called Anne Henry from Down Syndrome Liverpool, who literally, that lady changed my life. And I've never felt so welcome and understood. I think that was the thing. All these things that I had in my head that I couldn't say out loud, that I could say to other people and not get judgment, just support and understanding. And sometimes, especially, I was a first-time mum, and yeah, it was just the unknown. But the one thing Anne Kenwright said to me was, just treat her like you would any other baby. And that's what I did. But I also armed myself with knowledge. I asked parents, what do I do about this? What should I do about that? What did you do with this? And somebody recommended an LCLAN, Let's Talk with Under Fives course, which is basically a speech and language course that a lot of professionals use in nurseries and schools. Now, I did it through the Isabella Trust, which was an amazing charity that's no longer here. But it's the best course I ever did. And basically what they said is, when you speak to your child, you mouth the sound and break it down. So if you're saying mummy, with your mouth you say mummy, mummy. And eventually the mouth actions will come before the sound, and then the sound will follow. And that's how I was quite intensive with Gracie. People say, I think I was possessed for the first 3 years of Gracie's life, to be fair. I felt like I was on a mission to just get all the knowledge I could. But not the knowledge about Down syndrome, the knowledge about the interventions, the supports, the therapies to support a child with Down syndrome. And I say all the time to the local authority, my child is a result of all the support yous have given to her. Not because I've had to fight for it, but because when they've got to know her and we've had the right professionals involved, everyone sees how much she can thrive and not survive. And that's what it's about for me.
Were those professionals that you felt really supported by, was that through the NHS or were some of them private?
So it's been a battle. It's been a lot of butting heads at times, but it's also, what I've learned is, on this journey, evidence is the key. And if you gather that evidence, then that evidence will get your child the support they need. So we were really lucky that Gracie had an amazing mainstream school. If I'm being honest now, I regret taking her out of mainstream and putting her in SEND. I feel that since she's gone to SEND school, she's not my little Gracie that she was in mainstream. But mainstream can't cope with her. So she's classed as a SEND between child. She's in a SEND school. She's on a second SEND school. She's only 8. And still, she is not thriving in that school. So this journey is about what's best for your child. And every child's different. And everyone's journey is different. But it's about supporting each other, I think, as a community.
Now, you mentioned the word battle then. And yeah. This is like not...
Don't call it a fight. I like to call it a little battle.
Well, this isn't the first time I've heard that word. You know, fight, battle, whatever it is. It's essentially the same meaning. And it's a common theme from mums that I've spoken to on this podcast. Has any part of it for you, in terms of getting the right kinds of support for Gracie and the right kind of help, have you found any of that part of that process easy?
No. Simple answer. No, not one part of it. Even calling an emergency EHCP review, that's a battle in itself, to get a caseworker on the school around the table. The biggest battle I have had is other people seeing Gracie's behaviours. But once that mask slipped, everybody sees her behaviours now. She doesn't mask anymore. She is a little girl who is asking to learn in a primary school environment tailored to her needs, and still she's being failed.
I wish that seemed to be the exception to the rule, but it's not, is it?
And we haven't been to tribunal. I've been really lucky. We've had really good support. She's tried one sense school that was too complex for her, but they were amazing with her. And I even said to the teachers, can't you just like make a little classroom of mainstream kids who can't cope in mainstream and just have them in a little unit together? And they were like, we wish we could, but it all comes down to funding.
There it is again, that word.
Yeah. But so they found another LA maintained SEND school for her. She started in September. On day two, she school refused.
And yeah. How do you deal with that? I mean, is there anything that you can do?
Yes, gather your evidence. It sounds silly, but it's as simple as making sure school are logging the behaviours, making sure that LA are aware of the behaviours. Even her paediatrician, I make sure her paediatrician's involved in everything so she can give her professional medical opinion on anything to do with Gracie. We have social workers involved. She's recognised as a child in need. So we have a big support package in place. But again, it took 2 years to get there. We've had 7 social workers. We've had 4 child in need assessments. But we keep going. We keep going.
You've just reminded me, and I feel awful now because I can't remember who it was that told me, but it was one of the mums I spoke to on this podcast gave the advice, and it's very similar to what you're saying, but she actually had a big notebook, and her advice was to literally keep everything in one place. I mean, we've got all of the letters that we've ever received about Leo in a filing cabinet, but I loved her advice, like right from the very beginning, if you can, or, you know, wherever you are on your journey, get a notebook and write every appointment, every phone call, just everything. And it's like you said, isn't it? The evidence. And then if you're organised with it, I guess, because you're going to have a lot of evidence, it's then easier for you to look back and keep a track of everything, I guess. Because it's a lot going on, isn't there?
The best advice is a paper trail. Ever have a phone call, you always email afterwards. Following our telephone call, these issues were discussed, and the actions to follow are, because I have had professionals telling me that my child is being included in selection processes and it didn't happen, but I had it on email. So I had to go to via the complaint route, and she did get her school placement in the end. But again, it was via broken promises and complaints being made, and it shouldn't have to be like that. But it's not. I've learned on this journey that schools, parents, even the local authority, we're all fighting the same battle. And my message to everybody now is, then let's work together, because it's all about the children at the end of the day. People who say we go in for battles, it shouldn't be like that. We should be working together to meet the needs of these vulnerable children who need the support at the end of the day. And it shouldn't be about money.
No, it really shouldn't. You've mentioned behaviours and stuff. Am I right in thinking that Gracie has demand avoidance?
Gracie has autism with a demand avoidance profile. She's got ADHD combined. And she's now got an appointment in November to be assessed for oppositional defiance disorder, which is a new one.
So just explain, I've had Jessie Towns on before talking about demand avoidance. And if you're listening and you'd like to know more, it's a really, really interesting episode with Jessie. But for people who haven't heard that, Kelly, will you just explain what demand avoidance is?
So every single demand, even an everyday demand, like put your pyjamas on, brush your teeth, eat breakfast, to a child with a pathological demand avoidance, that is like asking them to cut the hair off, basically. Anything that's a demand will attack their system and their body will go into a shutdown response, and every other thing will come out. So with Gracie, we will have challenging behaviour, violent outbursts, she will destroy property, all because you're trying to make her do something. Not that she doesn't want to do, she can't do it. she physically inside can't do it. So it's choices. We work on choices. Getting ready in the morning. Do you want to put your vest on or do you want to put your socks on? Do you want to brush your teeth or do you want to wash your face? Okay, if you want to do that, then after that, shall we do this or shall we do that? It's like control. They have to be in control of everything in their everyday life. And for some children, even a demanding school of sit down, put your coat on, pick up your pen, that's a demand they can't cope with. And they do go into fight or flight mode. It's like it attacks their whole nervous system. And then this is where you get a lot of masking as well when people are at school, when they come home and they say they're in their safe environment. And then it's just boom. Everything they've held in all day will come out. It's hard. It's not easy, but it is manageable. And if you get the right support, interventions and strategies, like anything, it's something else that doesn't have to hold them back.
And can I ask, and this question has two parts to it. When that happens at home, how do you deal with it? And when it happens in public, which is a very different kind of kettle of fish, I guess, how do you deal with that?
In public, distract. Distract strategies are the best. Coercive persuasion, i.e. bribery, also works great when you're out. But at home, it is a case of letting her just settle. Letting her find her routine, her rhythm, and just hoping it's something quick that she comes out of. If not, it can turn, she also gets really emotional. So if she doesn't go into challenging behaviour, she'll go into extreme emotional distress and she will sob and hyperventilate and you just can't get any words out of her. And it's heartbreaking to see your little girl who's 8 having a breakdown because someone's tried to tell her to put her shoes on at school. And it's as simple as that.
Did you kind of self-diagnose the PDA and then seek a diagnosis, or was it something that was mentioned to you by somebody else?
So we'll go back to Gracie and her mainstream school. So in about, I think it was reception, they started seeing the behaviours I seen at home. She started lashing out in school, not listening. Basically, Gracie just walked around the school like she owned it. She didn't want to be in a classroom. She'd go in another classroom. If she didn't want to go there, she'd go somewhere else. If they said you're going to see the head teacher, she'd just take herself to the office, sit down and say, what are we doing today, miss? Like, she just, I say, I'd love to be like her. She has no cares in the world. She just lives her life in her own lane. And if you come into contact with you, then you're a lucky person. Because no matter what diagnosis she's got, she can be the most loving little girl in the world. And that's what everyone sees. And I'm glad of that. Everyone still sees Gracie before they see her diagnoses. And that's all I ever wanted for her.
So how did that start to present in school then?
So in school, the behaviours started escalating. We ended up asking for a complete reassessment of needs because we felt like her EHTP did not reflect how she was presenting. It was sent to panel, everything was agreed, and then she had a new educational psychologist assessment, which basically changed my life. He noticed everything. He picked up on the autism and the demand avoidance. He agreed with my concerns about ADHD because it was her behaviours that I was more concerned with. We'd go to play centres and there'd be other children with Down syndrome, and then Gracie would walk in like a whirlwind, and she didn't stop. So I knew, even once when she was a baby, she just wasn't the same. She never sat still. She stopped napping at 1. She hasn't slept through since she was 1. Her sleep is all over the place. And it was that educational psychologist report, basically, that opened the doors to everything. From that, we got a sensory integration assessment, which showed that she had severe sensory processing delays. Again, that opened the doors for a lot of support, and it was actually recommended by the educational psychologist that Gracie would benefit from a dual provision. So she went to mainstream 3 days a week and ascend school 2 days a week, and eventually the mainstream school said, we can't meet no needs no more. When Gracie goes into her junior year, she will just not cope in this learning environment. And that's when the Send School took over the EHCP. And then obviously we had a year in there. She completely regressed, massively regressed in all aspects. But all the other children in her class were improving. So my child was amazing for the other children. But it just wasn't the right school for her. And as I said, then now we're on another school and it was her social worker. She turned up one day, I'd forgot about the visit. Gracie was absolutely knocking everything out of me. When the social worker turned up, she was pulling the social worker's hair, kicking her legs, throwing things at her. And that's when the social worker said, I think she's got oppositional defiance disorder, not PDI. She said, it's everything. Gracie can't be told anything. It all has to be Gracie's way or no way. And now she started the no, the stamp in the foot. You cannot get my child to do anything she does not want to do. At school, she has her own start time and finish time because I can't get her out the house. She's ready, but she just won't leave until she's ready to leave. It can take 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. When we get to school, she won't get out the car. When we get into the school, she'll decide if she's going in or if she's not going in. And if she doesn't want to go in, I just have to take her home because there's no reasoning with her. So that's where we are at the minute.
I have to say, it's actually your experience of the educational psychologist and the social worker does actually seem to be a positive one. Because when I spoke to Jessie, and that whole episode was about PDA, she said, I can't remember whether it was her experience. I think it was a little bit, but she said in a lot of places, they won't actually recognise PDA as a diagnosis. So I think it really depends, firstly, on where you're living, and secondly, who it is that does those assessments. And maybe if you'd have had a different social worker come to the door, it might not have gone down that path. So it's actually nice to hear that you've had two people involved in Gracie's care there who really picked up on things and kind of intervened and changed the pathway for you.
And that's what a lot of parents find. Once you get one or two professionals who understand, who see it, they will help you. Like, it's not just them. I've had physios, OTs, everyone involved. And it's their letters that they send for you. It's their constant pushing to get your child what they need. And so many people don't get that. And that's the sad thing in this world, that it's almost like a postcode lottery. Like, I've got friends who live in Liverpool, I live in Knowsley, and we get Portage and they don't. And Portage in the early years is invaluable, in my opinion.
I had that exact same thing when Leo was first born. Somebody messaged me and said, I'll make sure you ask about Portage. Yeah. So I asked about that, and same thing. I mean, I have to say, all of the support that we've had for Leo has been fantastic. But yeah, that was one thing that I was told, well, yeah, that's just not available in Liverpool. And obviously there's people listening to this who are all over the country, and that some people will have that and some people will never have heard of that, I guess.
It's a service that's for the early years. That is for children with disabilities, where they'll come out to the home or you'll go to little groups at children's centres, and they're trained in with SEND children, and the work they do is invaluable. I remember when we had Portage and them coming to the house with Gracie, and she wouldn't do nothing for them. And literally, they'd just come, and then every time it would be the same. She'd engage for about 2 minutes and then she'd just point to the door and tell them to go. But even the little work that they did with her, it was, even for me, it helped me understand the support she needed. And we forget that as parents, we're our children's biggest support. And if we can carry over the therapies from the professionals, you know, our children are already set for, you know, having the best support possible.
I'd like to talk, if you don't mind. You'd sent me a little voice note before we recorded, and there was something in that voice note, because I kind of, every guest I have on, I kind of like, you know, tell me a little bit about your story. And there was something in yours And this is going to make me feel emotional because it made me cry listening to you on this voice note. And I couldn't see you at the time and I can see you now. So it's going to be worse. And it was about something that, I mean, I know, first of all, you didn't have a good experience being told that Gracie had Down syndrome, which is unfortunately quite common in a lot of the women that I've spoken to on this podcast. I have to say, again, just to balance it out, we were extremely lucky in how we were told. We did get the word sorry, which at the time felt appropriate. And in hindsight, no, I wish that it hadn't been said that way, but
should be celebrated. And that's the one thing I've been trying to say in maternities is congratulations. Maybe your journey is going to be a bit different, but we still celebrate the birth of every child. Yeah.
I will say, though, that our doctor was, yes, that word was used, but I would say it was in a very empathetic way. She was really supportive and is still involved in Leo's care now, which, and I really like her. She's been fabulous the entire way through. But what I want to talk to you about, moving on from that, it was something that a doctor said to you a little bit later on, which is, will you just tell everyone listening about that, please?
I was sat on Skaboo with Gracie and I was by myself and a doctor came up and he said to me, are you thinking of having more children? I've just had Gracie. She's like 3-4 weeks old. Like, why are you asking me that question? And he said, it's your fault your child's got Down syndrome. And if you think of having any more children, we suggest you came to see us for tests first. I never told anyone that for about 3 or 4 years. Something that I held on to me and something that I now know is not true. It's not my fault she had Down syndrome at all. But I didn't have no more children because of them words that doctor said to me when I could have. But in a way, I'm glad I didn't, because I get to give everything to Gracie and she gives me everything back.
I'm so sorry that somebody said that to you, because I think as a fellow mum of a child with, you know, well, I suppose I would imagine that any SEN mum has these thoughts, but I can certainly tell you that I did when Leo was born. And my mind immediately went to, it's because I've had him when I'm older. This is my fault. Yeah. This has happened. This, what I perceived at the time to be this awful thing that is the worst thing that could have ever happened is because of me.
Why me? And it is because of me. Yeah.
But I think to almost have those fears confirmed by somebody that you would perceive to be knowledgeable about what they're talking about is absolutely horrific, because Down syndrome isn't caused by somebody or by something. It just happens.
Yeah, it's just nature. It's one of them things. And you know what? I used to follow a lot of groups, and one of the things was the lucky few. And you know what we are? Because we get to live our children's lives through their eyes, and we get to enjoy moments that other people take for granted. And we celebrate our children in a way that every child should be celebrated.
100%. And also, I think, I don't know if you've had the same experience, Leo really taught me very early on to live in the moment.
Yeah, definitely.
Which changed my outlook and almost allowed me to just enjoy him more than I would have done had he not had Down syndrome.
Definitely, definitely. I think as well, because our babies stay babies for so much longer as well, the bond, I think, that we get, you know, we are lucky. I don't care what anyone says. If I could go back to me now, 8 years ago, sat in that hospital with what I know now, I probably would have turned around to that doctor and said, how dare you, get out. But at that time, I was broken. I was vulnerable. I was processing things that I didn't think I'd have to process, with very limited support of it around me at the time. But if anyone else was to ever find themselves in that situation now, I'd probably advise them to say to the doctor, I think you need to go back to training school.
Yeah, so it's a good line, though.
But you do, I think on this journey, guilt is a big thing I've lived with, massively guilt. Guilt of looking at my child and just seeing Down syndrome and not seeing her for so long. Looking at my child and seeing all the worries of how the world was going to accept her, of how she was going to fit into the world. And I look now and I think, no, it's how does the world fit in with my child?
I know. I think with Down syndrome specifically, though, I think because there are certain physical characteristics, and yeah, every child with Down syndrome looks different. And if you are a mum of a child with a different need and you don't know that much about Down syndrome, there's a really lovely thing that I keep reading all the time, because it's actually, I don't know when this episode will go out, but in real time, it's Down Syndrome Awareness Month. And I've seen this a lot this month on Instagram, that children with Down syndrome look more like their family than they look like they have Down syndrome. So yes, there are certain characteristics, and not all children have all of those characteristics. Some do, some don't. But, you know, ultimately, though, it is something that is visual. Like, yeah, most of the time when you look at a child, you can tell for whatever reason it is that they have Down syndrome. And I really struggled with that, Kelly, at the beginning.
But did you think you see children with Down syndrome everywhere all of a sudden?
Yeah, like, of course.
Everywhere. Looked, there was a child with Down syndrome.
Absolutely. And I was like, were they always there, or am I just noticing them now? But I think when you've got that diagnosis, whether you were expecting it or not, it's extremely difficult at the beginning, I found, to separate your baby from the diagnosis when you can physically see it.
Yeah. And you have all the guilt inside of, I've caused this to my baby, or why me? And I think society is to blame, a lot of it, and uneducated people. And I say this all the time, that if I could take Gracie into places where lots of community are, and they could meet her and get to know a child with Down syndrome, everyone's opinion would change in an instant. They're like typical children. None of them are the same. It's like, when you get your diagnosis, and I remember I was told she might not walk, she might not talk, she might not do this, she might not do that. Well, mum on a mission here was like, well, she will talk and she will walk and she will do this. And because I'd found other people in the community and I'd seen their children, and I thought, well, if their children can do it, why can't my child do it? And I think that was when my mind started to turn from guilt and denial to acceptance. And I think once you reach acceptance, wow, that's when your whole mindset changes. And I think that me as a person's changed. Like, things that mattered before don't matter anymore. If I can shut my door and know that my child is safe and happy, that's the most that matters to me in the world now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting what you said then, though, about lack of education, because I will absolutely hold my hands up. I'm very honest about this. I was one of those uneducated people before I had a child with Down syndrome. I knew nothing. All I had about Down syndrome in my head was stereotypes, things I'd seen in films, or, you know, whatever it was a certain visual of what that would look like and thoughts of what that would mean. And I think one thing, I don't know if you were the same, I really struggled to say the words to start with, because of the feelings and the imagery that that conjured up for me in my uneducated head. So it took me quite a long time, actually, to be able to say the words, my baby has Down syndrome, without crying.
I was the same, Gemma, exactly the same. And so I started just using DS. But like, yeah, Grace got DS. And when I was going to the Down syndrome Liverpool groups, it just stuck. And a lot of us now will say, oh yeah, our child's got DS, or our child's got this, because I think it's the name as well, isn't it? I wish it was John Happy who discovered it. And it was, his name was Happy Syndrome. Because Down, there's nothing down about any of that. And I think that's the biggest battle that we face as parents as well. If it was called Happy Syndrome, we'd probably say, oh yeah, my child's got Happy Syndrome. And yeah, it's just society. And in 2025, people with Down syndrome are still looked upon as not being able to be included, when it's the total opposite.
I know. I think for me, like one of the, I post about Leo quite often on my Instagram, but I like posting things about Leo having Down syndrome, because I think for me as his mum and somebody who was very uneducated before, I feel it's very important for me personally to feel like I am spreading awareness and educating people, because there are people who will follow me on Instagram, regardless of how many followers anyone's got. There are people who will follow me who were, well, probably most of the people that follow me, certainly to start with, let's be honest, would have been like me, don't know anything about Down syndrome, have a certain, you know, stereotypical view in their head of what that means. And I am quite passionate about disproving that and breaking that down and posting videos and pictures and things about Leo and Down syndrome in general that make people go, oh, okay. Oh, that's not what I thought. Oh, I didn't realize that. Like, I feel extremely passionate about doing that. And also, you know, selfishly, that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast. I wanted people, aside from making a place that felt like a community and giving a place for people to feel heard and to hear other people say how they felt.
Yeah.
I wanted to make more people understand more about Down syndrome.
Well, I think you're doing amazing.
Oh, well, thank you, Kelly.
You on the radio when you'd first had Leo and how hard it was for you to talk about him.
Yeah.
I hear you on the radio now and I hear the pride in your voice of your amazing little boy. And that's because you're an amazing mom.
Oh, well, thank you, Kelly. Well, right back at you. And I think, yeah, I think whether you choose to do that in a way of, a lot of people have, you know, dedicated accounts to their children with that need. And I follow a lot of those accounts and I find them extremely helpful. My personal choice is to not make my whole account about that, because that's just what I've chosen to do. And some people choose not to share anything and choose to help raise up that awareness just by talking to people. But I think everyone's doing it in their own way, aren't they?
And that's what matters. It might seem silly, but even if you're in the doctors or somewhere and you have a conversation with a parent and then that parent goes away and finds a support group you've recommended, that's spreading awareness.
Yeah, 100%.
That one person who didn't know about the services before that does now. And that's why I believe that there can never be too many support groups for some parents, because everybody needs different support at different times. And the more support you access, the better your journey will be.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I always kind of inwardly, I suppose half laugh and half cringe at, is, you know, when people, well, I've got one person in my mind, actually, and it's Amy, who I've had on, who's Remy's mum. And she was one of the first Down syndrome accounts that I followed on Instagram. And I found her content super helpful. That she quite often posts things like, you know, things that I don't like hearing as a mum of a child with Down syndrome, or things not to say. And every time she posts that, I'm like, I would have said all of those things before I had Leo, aside from the mean things. I think I'm a nice person. There are some things that are just mean, but things along the lines of, oh, you, are you sure? Or, oh, he doesn't look like he's got Down syndrome. Those types of things that I now know, absolutely not the one to say, but I know that in a well-meaning way, I would have said those things, or I would have said, oh God, I'm so sorry. You know, all of those things that I now know. And that's the other thing I think is important in whatever way, is to raise awareness of, is the language.
Definitely, it's person first. We go into appointments and the doctor's talking to me and I'm like, talk to Gracie. She can answer, you know. Address her, you're talking about her and she's sat right next to me, she's 8 now, she can understand what you're saying, and she could probably tell you more about dowsing than what you know.
How are you with correcting people? Because that's something I'm still working on. I've done it a couple of times and I've said, oh, you know, would you mind not saying that? Because, you know, it would be nicer, or we'd prefer it if you said it in this way. How are you with that?
So to be fair, I've been quite lucky that a lot of professionals that we meet always ask me how I'd like.
Oh, that's nice.
They ask me now, do we say Gracie has Down syndrome? And I always say, just say Gracie's got DS. And a whole load of associated health conditions.
How about people who aren't health professionals, though?
I've had more positives than negatives in the community with Gracie. I always remember once we were in Sainsbury's and she was a baby and she was in a pram and we had the oxygen and everything. And some woman came up, an older woman, just looked in the pram and she went, she got Down syndrome. And it took my breath away because she was asleep. It was like, how can you even tell? And that woman put her hand on my shoulder and she said, no matter how hard you feel it is right now, she said, it will get easier and your child will bring you so much joy and love to your whole family. She was about 3 or 4 months old and that stuck with me forever. So now if I do tend to see anybody or they do say anything, I just make Gracie talk to them. She's been out. She gets money off people. Like when we're out, she randomly sees people. She'd be like, hi, Grandma. And I remember one woman, she was like, I haven't got new grandchildren. And Gracie said, what's your name? And she said, Barbara. And she was like, hi, Grandma Barbara. Having a proper conversation with her. She gave Gracie £20 and said, go and buy her a toy. She said, you've made my day. And that's what I want. I just want Gracie to go through life, leaving a lasting impression on people for the right reasons.
And I'm sure that she will, Kelly. I'm sure they all will.
For those as mums, they're going to.
You've mentioned about support a few times in this conversation. So I'd like to talk to you about the network that you've set up.
Oh, Merseyside Centre Support Network. I've done a lot of work with Down Syndrome Liverpool and it's an amazing charity. The events they provide, the meetups and everything. Like, Down Syndrome Liverpool done so much for me when I was first on my journey. But what I found from talking to parents is what you've said. How do we get EHCPs? What do we do about DLA forms? What support can we get? If we get an EHC needs assessment rejected, what do we do about going to mandatory considerations, tribunals? So I educated myself on that and became a qualified parents send advocate. And the one thing I think in my journey is that if you can help anyone in any way and relieve the pressure from them and just be a support, it means more than anything to some people, especially people who are new on journeys or have recently had diagnoses and they just don't know where to turn. And like you said, you get given a leaflet. You get told to go on a local offer. So we decided to set up a little group of 7 parents who want to build a community for some parents and their children to come together, to have little events, coffee mornings, basically just be able to have a safe space where they can be themselves and talk about the worries and all the things that we feel, like you said, you sometimes you feel you can't talk about. When you're in an environment of other parents who've been through similar situations, who have similar children with similar needs, just talking is the biggest help. So yeah, we quite new. We've got a little Facebook group, we've got WhatsApp groups, and it's just some parents supporting each other. If we can come to a meeting and hold your hands and ask the questions that you don't know what to ask, then we'll come to that meeting. If we can come to your child's school because you don't feel that you can get across what you want to speak, we'll come and hold your hands and we'll go to meetings with you and we know all the laws and we know everything, and we'll just make sure your child gets what they deserve, because at the end of the day, every child deserves that.
Do you know what I think is really nice about what you've just said is like the hand holding through certain things, because you hear all the time, don't you? And I've heard it so many times from people, like, yeah, you are your child's best advocate. You know your child best. But actually, some people don't have the confidence to do that, or they don't feel comfortable doing that, or maybe they don't have the knowledge to do that. So yes, I agree, if you're able to, you're always going to be your child's best advocate. But I think it's lovely that you've set something up for people that maybe don't feel like they actually are their child's best advocate.
Another reason as well is I want my child to have friends, and I want her to grow up with friends in a community with similar abilities. And that was another reason why it was came about, because you can go to events in the community, you can go to all these different things for SEND children, but every child deserves a friend, and every child deserves to have regular meetups with them friends, and then the parents become friends, and then you become a family, and then a community, and then it takes the village to raise the child, and I want to build that village.
I think that's lovely. It's a lovely feeling around it. And I think that your tagline's lovely as well.
Thank you.
Go on. You need to say it now.
What? I can't even. What's my tagline?
I've got your tagline written down, Kelly. Don't you worry. Set up by SEND parents for SEND parents. And I think immediately that makes it feel very inclusive. It makes it feel like you are going to be supported and understood.
We are inclusive, not exclusive.
Love that.
Doesn't matter what your child has. If your child has siblings, anybody, your whole family, anyone can come to our events. Anyone can join the community. We've got nans, we've got granddads. Everyone's looking for support. And it's just sad that in this day and age, there's no one place you can go to get that support. So that's why we started it, to bring all the support groups together, create a network, and parents can get all the support they need that way.
I think it's a good point you've just raised there, because certainly when Leo was first born and diagnosed, it sounds quite selfish now, but I won't be alone in this, and I think it's probably quite natural. Yeah. I considered how it affected my older children, because they live with us and they are, you know, they're literally seeing Leo every day. Yeah. But I didn't consider how it would affect our wider family, because I just couldn't really see, almost out of our house at that point. All I could see was how we were feeling. But just like you aren't given a handbook, you might be given a leaflet, like you said, but you're not given a handbook of this is how you talk now. These are things not to say. These are things to say. This is what you need to do. This is, you know, this is the correct way to now move forwards in this journey. Your wider family aren't given that either.
No. To be fair, it was my dad. Like, when I had Gracie, it took me 15 hours to see her after she'd been born. And it was my dad who came and sat down next to me and said, "She's a cracker. Go and see her. She looks like you." He was like, "She's got a Mohican, a ginger hair." And that's what I needed someone to say to me, is, "She's beautiful. Just go and look at her." And I'm really sorry, but I think she's knocking on my door right now. Hold on one second. Speak of the devil. Hello. I'm on a podcast, sorry. Just say hi to Gemma quick and come in.
Hello.
Right, this is the Amanda Voidant. Now, Gemma, will you say hello to Gemma and then I'll let you play in the playroom?
Oh, yeah.
This is Gracie. This is why we think she has oppositional defiance this week.
Kelly, now seems like a good time to finish with my final two questions.
Okay.
So you listen to this podcast, so you'll know what these are. And the first one is, what is the best piece of advice that you've been given along the way?
The best piece of advice that I've been given is to seek support from other people in the same situation and to get your advice from them. Because people who have walked the journey before you have got the lived experience, the knowledge, and most importantly, the empathy to understand what you're going through.
I love that. That's brilliant advice. And my final question is, what do you know now that you wish you'd known then?
That it's not my fault. I think that's the biggest thing, is that, and that the guilt that you feel, the joy when you accept it and your child starts hitting their milestones and you start celebrating everything that comes around. Just takes all that away. It really does.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So, Kelly, tell me where, if people are in the Merseyside area, where can they find the Merseyside Send Support Network? How can they get in touch with you?
We are on Facebook. We have a page and we also have a private group for parents to join where they can get advice, support and everything. We also post up meetups, events, everything on there. We've also got a TikTok, Merseyside Send Support Network. We have a website as well, Merseyside Send Support Network, and that has got lots of resources on there. It's only new, but we are updating it all the time, and we hope to have lots of information regarding EHCPs, speech and language, OT, even resources on going to mediation, things like that. Anything that can help parents along this process.
Fabulous. Kelly, send me all those links and I will put those in the show notes so that people are able to find you easily. I think what you're doing is amazing and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, Gemma, what you're doing is amazing and thank you so much for spreading the awareness that you are.
Thank you, Kelly. Do you know what? I love that Gracie got involved at the end there. You've got my Leo shouting up the stairs at the beginning and then Gracie at the end. But, you know, I like it when that happens. There's probably a bit of my dog barking in there as well because the Amazon man came to the door. But I think it's just real life, isn't it? You know, unfortunately, it is kind of nice to hear all of that normal stuff in the background, I guess. But I was going to say, unfortunately, I currently don't have the funds to be doing this in like a swanky studio with nice lighting and all of that. It's just me and my laptop and my mic upstairs in our little office come studio. So yeah, there is going to be a bit of chaos involved sometimes. And if you are a mom of a child with Down syndrome, speaking of chaos, you might want to listen back to the episode where I interviewed my husband Ben as a Father's Day special. I mean, literally everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong. And a lot of people always mention that episode to me and say how funny they found it because of the absolute chaos that you definitely wouldn't find on one of those swanky polished podcasts, because that is currently definitely not what this is. But anyway, thank you again to Kelly. I love that chat. I think, as always, when I speak to a fellow DS mum, it does make me feel a bit emotional because I think you just relate so much, and hearing anything negative said about Down syndrome always gets me. And I suppose it's the same as anybody saying anything negative about something to do with your child ever, isn't it? But yeah, I love chatting to Kelly. Always feel so impressed by people who have then gone on to set something up in any way, really, that is helping other mums. So well done to Kelly. All the links for the Merseyside Send Support Network are in the show notes, or they will be once I've written them. So if you are in the Merseyside area and that's something that you feel could support you if you do have a child with any kind of send, then yeah, you can go to the show notes and find all the info there. And that is it for another episode. As always, you can get in touch with me via the podcast Instagram, which is at the Send Mum Club. Give it a little follow if you aren't already. So you can message me on there. You can see little clips from previous guests. And yeah, get in touch, get involved. Guest suggestions, I'm always up for. Anything you'd like to hear me talk about on the podcast, whatever it is, drop me a little message. I would love to hear from you. And also, while you're on your phone, if you could follow and subscribe and rate and review and all those things if you haven't already, I would really appreciate it. Right, that's it. Thanks for listening.